I'm really enjoying this little mini-series that we have, talking to the fresh voices that have emerged on the South African media scene. And one of the biggest, loudest, and most influential of them is Dr. Sizwe Mpofu Walsh. We're talking with him today. Sizwe, thanks for joining us. It's been interesting watching your development. And, you know, when you look back on it, I suppose the first question for me is, here you are, you've been to Oxford University, you've got a doctorate from Oxford, the world has to be your oyster as a consequence of that. You've got a really interesting, the more I dug into your background, the more of a polymath you appear to be in, with interests and achievements in many different fields. So why are you doing what you're doing, which is really paddling your own canoe in the media space?
Well, thanks so much for having me. I'm an avid viewer of your channel, which may surprise some, and it's wonderful to be here. You know, you're right. When you're at a place like Oxford, you start to feel like you can do whatever you want to do. You know, offers from Goldman Sachs feel close at hand, or writing books, or, you know, just doing anything conventional really becomes particularly achievable. But I've always obviously had a deep passion for our country, as I know you do too. And I truly believe that digital media has taken off fully in other places and has matured, but I think it's ripe for very much a revolution in our country right now. And I think as our politics is shifting, many people haven't realized that our media landscape is also shifting. And there's a great opportunity now at a fraction of the cost to shape discourse, to deepen discourse, to do the things that one gets so frustrated that the mainstream media doesn't do it. That really gets me out of bed and excites me, because I think our country is at an important turning point. Those who play a role in the media landscape are going to be just as, if not more, important and influential than those who are on the front lines of politics.
Now, you have got a platform through the SABC, but you primarily broadcast for your own account. Was there ever a thought of perhaps going in with a big media brand? Or perhaps, just to put it differently, why did you want to paddle your own canoe?
Yes, well, I lasted 1 year at the SABC, so I'm actually not even there anymore. And that's a story for another day, actually. Maybe we'll have a whole interview on that. But it was fascinating to see the inside of the public broadcaster. It reaffirmed my suspicion that traditional and mainstream media are still very far behind the curve and haven't quite woken up to the explosion of digital channels in our country at the moment. I just think that the formats of traditional media feel very outdated. In particular, and this is something I enjoy about your channel too, is that there's this idea that you have to be confrontational in order to be a legitimate journalistic voice. And what I've always found more interesting is to sit back and bring someone into conversation, but not antagonize them to the point where they start to feel defensive. And often what you get from that, and that's kind of the format of my interviews in addition to the analysis that I do, is you get an interesting perspective and you learn something from the other person. And yes, maybe you don't trap them into making some great admission, but you give your audience the benefit of the doubt that, you know, if the person says something crazy, the audience will pick it up. And you don't have to be the person constantly pretending like you're smarter than the other person. And I just feel like that format is much more effective for South Africa today rather than, you know, the 20-minute SABC interview or radio interview where there are 5 ad breaks and you actually can't get a sense of what the person really thinks. And that's what excites me about the work that we are able to do in this space.
It is extraordinary. You're very similar in your philosophy of your audience, I think, to the way that we at BizNews have followed, and even previously at MoneyWeb, in that we have never overestimated the knowledge of our audience, but never You can never underestimate their intellect. They are far smarter. People are much, much, much smarter than traditional media gives them credit for. And I think what the way you've articulated it now is something that is just being so badly missed for many years. And I guess it's because media, old media, was very monopolistic. And now that you the people can get to absorb and to enjoy the kind of work that you do, I think that it opens minds as well. And isn't that really what we're here to do?
I think so. And, you know, we will probably get into the GNU and this political moment right now. But one of the crises in South African media for me, especially in the Ramaphosa era, was that media almost became a cheerleader for the government and stopped playing its critical role. Not in the sense of having antagonistic interviews, but just exploring other perspectives, looking at things from different angles, and allowing voices who are critical to also have their say. And not the only say, but to have their say. And I think what digital media has now unlocked is a whole set of different perspectives, which then allows the viewer to come to BizNews and say, okay, let me see what Tin and Zilla thinks. And then they probably come to my channel and they listen to a completely different perspective. But either of those perspectives would probably have been impossible to access just via the mainstream platforms. And that's why I think it's exciting. There are also huge dangers. When you start to learn these technologies, you realize how replicable it is and how bad actors can also probably make use of them too. But the fact of the matter is this moment is here now, and it's not going anywhere.
You're 35. You've already achieved a huge amount. If you look ahead 15 years, where are you going to be?
Son, you know, I don't know, Alec. I've resisted a number of things my whole life. The first thing I resisted unsuccessfully, because I'm now finishing a law degree as law. As you, my father's a lawyer, a lot of people around me, my godfather was a judge at the Constitutional Court. So law has always been central in my family, and I rebelled against studying law, but I've now started that. Politics has always also been something that's expected from me, because politics is also in my family. My mom was an ANC branch chair and actually beat my father to that post just as I was born. I don't think he forgave her for that. But I've rebelled because I contrary, and I'm so glad I have a chance to say that, contrary to many perceptions, I'm not a member of any political party. And I don't find a home in any of our political options right now. And so I've never been comfortable towing a party line, and that's why right now the media feels like the right place to be, where I can find my voice and I can express it freely. So I don't know, Alec. I might be in the some GNU dungeon in 15 years. Who knows? But I leave the future open to many possibilities. Maybe our platforms will be so big by then that it won't even matter. You know, there was a funny thing. I heard that when I was at Oxford, Facebook had just really begun booming. And someone said to Mark Zuckerberg, he was in a conversation, you know, is your aim to be president of the United States? And Zuckerberg responded, when I'm done, I won't need to.
I like that. A GNU dungeon. It's I know you said it in jest, but I suppose in a way, the way the world is going at the moment, there are all kinds of threats, imagined or unimagined, that exist. And how are you seeing the democratic project in South Africa? How strong do you feel that it is?
You know, I have mixed feelings. And I think as South Africans, we often fail to express those mixed feelings. We swell in between extremes of euphoria and hysteria. And I think the truth is somewhere in between. And I can feel the nation swinging to another euphoric extreme right now. And I completely understand that. There's a lot to be hopeful about, topmost of which for me is the hammering that the ANC got in this election. And just the way that South Africans from all kinds of backgrounds stood up and said this far and no further. And I think that that message, no matter who the government is, the future will resound across many generations. So that's why I'm hopeful. But I'm also trepidatious because in this moment of euphoria, I think we're losing a lot. And although the ANC, in my view, lost the election, I think it has won the negotiations after the election and has found ways to reconsolidate its power under the guise, I think, of this GNU. And in that way, I think because it has co-opted certain other parties and other voices into this project, we have a situation where there's very little critical reflection on what this GNU means and what it can become. And I'm really determined to play the role of constructive criticism, of trying to counterbalance this euphoria against the reality that I think practically and even in theory, this GNU still has a lot to prove. And the jury for me is still very much out on whether they can achieve what many seem to believe that they will easily achieve.
So how will you play that role?
Well, I think on my platform, I try to curate a set of conversations which come from many perspectives. In fact, I interviewed the most in the election was the DA, funnily enough. But I also try to curate voices who I think are interesting, but also critical. And in my analysis, try to always ask myself, if everyone is thinking X, then what could the pitfalls of that be? Because, you know, they say if everyone agrees, then not everyone is thinking. And so I'm very clear in my analysis that here's what I believe. A government should be praised when it does something right, when it achieves something. The GNU hasn't achieved anything. And I think that the mistake we maybe fell into in the Ramaphosa presidency was we congratulated before there was any need to congratulate. And then what happened was the government realized that, oh, we can basically do anything because people aren't even looking anymore. They just want to congratulate us for whatever we do. And I will be the first, if the GNU tackles unemployment, you know, if we see real progress on service delivery, you know, if we see important changes in energy and logistics, I think then we can actually sit back and say, you know what, well done. But until then, I think we need to remain skeptical. And this government needs to know that if it puts a foot wrong, we will be there to challenge it, because I fear complacency more than its opposite in the government.
But isn't that a beauty of the media environment as it now is? You've got hundreds of thousands of people who watch your interviews, your perspectives on YouTube, which would have been impossible in the past. Certainly when I was your age, we had SABC and nobody wanted to work for the SABC for pretty obvious reasons back then. So it is a responsibility, I guess, for people to be prodded. And certainly if you don't speak truth to power, then power, well, we know how they operate in that kind of environment.
Absolutely. And not everyone can, you know, Alec. I think many people, maybe for financial reasons, would prefer to speak outside of the public. And I completely understand that many people are too poor to actually even get a platform. And in the position that I'm in, I am actually someone, and I realize this, who is able to speak critically. And so that's why I do it. And I think we must always remember in South Africa that there are many who can't or won't. And that critical space, which I fear might be shrinking now in the GNU movement, as for example, supporters of the DA, I think, would be confused as to what to do now. They're used to criticizing the government. Now they're part of the government. And I think their voices are going to be really important, even in holding their own DA ministers accountable and making sure that we don't have an echo chamber, which just praises the government and then leaves us in a situation where we have postponed in view of consensus building. I'm not so sure how much we need consensus right now. I think we need decisive action.
How long do you think this government of national unity will last? And I ask this because something in my interview yesterday with Helen Ziller really came back at me. She said we weren't going to be taken again by the ANC in Gauteng, because when we agreed to 6 cabinet posts, we thought there was a cabinet of 27. But Cyril then just increased the cabinet, and hence we find ourselves looking at something very different to what we imagined. Now, if you're starting from that basis, the shotgun marriage might not really be there to last for very long. But I'm actually expressing something here, but I'd love to get your insight on that.
It's an interesting question. And if history is any precedent, even the 1994 GNU, which lasted until 1996, only lasted 2 years. And it was a constitutionally mandated government that was brought together by the towering presence of Nelson Mandela, that was representative of 92% of the electorate. And so even a government of that kind of legitimacy found it difficult to maneuver across the ideological divides that characterized it. I don't know, Alec, but, well, you know, I have used the term. I even worry and wonder whether this is, whether GNU is a useful term. And what I think President Ramaphosa has skillfully done is he has positioned the government as the same thing as the nation, so that if you disagree with the government, you are now disagreeing with national unity itself. And I think what we really have here is a multi-party coalition. It's very diverse and it's quite representative, but it's not quite the same thing as a government which unites the nation. I'm not even sure if it unites the parties yet. And so, you know, I think they will work hard to try and make it work initially, because it would be just a disaster for all concerned to let this slip. But I think there's a very short honeymoon period in which I think we're still in the glow of. When that runs out, I have serious practical concerns about how this cabinet works, how they make decisions, how they have the agility to move at the kind of speed they need to move at to fix problems created by the same people who are in this cabinet right now. And I think patience will wear quite thin if they can't, you know, bring very tangible victories very quickly to the table.
Well, we can rely on you to be waving the flag and asking the difficult questions. Just by way of background, what kind of books do you read? What shapes your worldview?
I read a very wide range. I really enjoy history. In fact, there's a fascinating book that I'm reading right now called The Quartet, which is about the founding of the United States and their moment of constitutional transition. And it's a really fascinating moment for me now, as debates around South Africa's constitution seem to be gaining ground, because it seems to me that every democracy that has longevity has the capacity for recreation and self-recreation. And I feel like we may be going into one of those periods in our history where we need to sit back, really think about the fundamentals, and recreate. And this book, The Quartet, is about these four founders, Madison, Hamilton, I think Washington, and John Jay, who was the first Supreme Court Justice, and how they took this early version of the Constitution and about 20 to 30 years later, remade it to the final U.S. Constitution that we have now. So that's just one. I read a lot about personal development and time management, funnily enough. I really enjoy that literature, and, you know, how you make the most of your time and how you structure your calendar. Literature, law, a lot now because I'm studying law. So there's a lot, and a whole lot of podcasts. I think podcasts are just as important as books. And I actually consider watching a show like this or an informative podcast the same as reading.
And if you look back on your entrepreneurial pursuits to date, because there would be a lot of guys looking at you and saying, I want to be like him. Okay, I haven't been to Oxford. I haven't, probably unlikely to ever get a doctorate, but I would also like to start my own business. How much of that comes into your thinking on a day-to-day basis? Do you have to deal with bank managers and staff issues, etc.?
Well, it's hilarious because I seem to have become a reluctant entrepreneur. It was not in the plan, but this channel is a fully fledged business now, and that means engaging with, you know, everyone from those who shoot the content to building the audience to managing the finances, making sure that, you know, there's sound financial management in the business so that, you know, things can last. I've learned a great deal. I actually worked for 6 months as a management consultant just before I went to Oxford as well. So it's been fascinating, and they say the best businesses are those that kind of do grow organically and emerge out of a passion to do something, a business that then builds their passion up. So that's been really interesting to me, and I've learned a lot while flying the plane and building it at the same time.
Warren Buffett says, if you do what you love, you never work a day in your life. And I think Sizwe Mpofu Walsh, and certainly for me, Alec Hogg, it's been a privilege and a pleasure talking with you. And I hope that I continue, as you do, to never work a day in my life. We will be back, I'm sure, to catch up on your progress in time to come. But thank you for joining us today. I'm Alec Hogg from BizNews.com.